YouTube was the new thing, which was like a long time ago. So we started to film little student events and we packaged them up and put them out on YouTube. And Kate and William got engaged in my final year, and we thought, brilliant, we're going to come back as that first event as an engaged couple to St Andrews when I was there. So I queued up for hours in the morning to sort of get along the line up where she's going to walk. So hopefully film my little handy cam, a shot of her for our student thing. All the main media was way down, penned down the end. So I queued for hours. A little girl was standing next to me, and I thought, with flowers, I thought, this is brilliant. Kate's definitely a friendly guy. And I stood there. And she did. She walked along. She came straight to the little girl, took the flowers, and I said, Catherine, can I ask you a few questions about, you know, being back here with your fiancé in St Andrews? I'm a student here. And I spoke to her for maybe only a few minutes, filmed it terribly, but she chatted on camera. And we then called the university and said, I've got this great clip, okay, I'm going to put it on YouTube, it's been brilliant. And they said, don't do it. All the media are going to just take it off, use it, go and tell them you've got it first. So we trekked around trying to find the satellite digits, which is what you would sort of head for. And we saw the BBC on the side, so we ran over and told them, and they offered us quite a fair sum of money. It turned out we didn't realise Kate hadn't actually spoken on camera at all yet. She just got engaged, it was a whole new thing, her doing any media. So we didn't know this, so they offered us something, but what we really wanted, what I really wanted, was work experience. And they said, no, proper channels, sorry. But across the road was the ITV dish. So we walked over and said, okay, they've offered us this, but we'd love work experience. And they said, sure thing. So I came down and did some work experience. We bought camera equipment with what they gave us financially. And then we started working there and got trained up as a trainee and did some of the journalism side, kind of work on the legal side. I was supposed to go and do a course originally, which I didn't go to do. And then ended up working whilst training there, moved over to Westminster for a few years, and then eventually the Royal Patch for quite a few years. So yeah, it was a very bizarre journey and not regular at all.
That's so funny. That's brilliant. Could you give us maybe a few highlights of your time working with the Royals?
Yeah, sure. I mean, day to day was very different. Some days would just be kind of official engagements. There was always something happening each day. And other times it was large scale events, so big weddings, anniversaries, big scale services, or it was the tours, which were the big thing where you might go away for 3 whole weeks and you travel in a pack with the BBC and Sky and CNN. And so I actually knew my counterparts there better than I did my own colleagues sometimes, because I spent a lot of time with that group in a kind of pack moving around. But on those trips, there were funny, I think it's behind the camera moments, you know, behind the scenes stuff that was amusing and interesting. You'd be on these flights with them, often just a small private jet, and they'd only be a few rows ahead. Kate's hair in rollers, all her dresses laid out, and then she would literally get in the bathroom, you know, in the loo on the plane, get dressed, we'd all land and get booted off the back, line up as if we'd been there all day, and then they'd walk out waving, and you know, you'd see it all, it was all, but it was the way it worked. So those moments were very funny. And other things like just their sort of personality coming through. We were filming in Bhutan where the national sport is archery, and these archers were just incredible. You couldn't even see where their arrows were landing, and they asked Kate and William to have a go. And Kate, classically, like, was just amazing, actually. It went so far, we couldn't film it in time. And then William had a go, I think it actually fell at his feet, basically. And he burst out laughing, turned to us. I think it was our role was filming for everyone that day. So we were filming, just myself and a few others. He just said, can I do it again? It's just so embarrassing, please let me do it again. So little moments where they were, it was, yeah, very relaxed and relational, which was fun and interesting.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought before speaking with you that it seems like the journalists would actually get sort of an insider view into what the Royals were like as people. Yeah, how did you find them in that way?
Yeah, good question. I think they were, I think you quickly realise that they are people. So I think that did shape how I covered them. And they were people who made mistakes. They were different off camera, sometimes on camera we saw on side. Sometimes we're in very small rooms doing sit down, maybe only 4 of us in a room. And so you do chat to them and you hear things and they talk about their own lives. At the end of the tours, they often did a drinks thing with this little team, the media team that travelled with them, because these trips could be weeks. And I used to talk to William and Kate about our time at St Andrews and how they found it, their favourite things to do. We were once in an earthquake actually, a very not a big one, but we had to run out of the building, so did they. And Kate used to talk about her children to me. It was just, a lot of it was very relational and personal. And I think particularly my Christian faith affected the way I viewed them. I think I was very aware that they were people, and I wanted to be very fair how we covered them. Like, it's very hard in journalism. Everyone wants a scoop and exclusive, and you're kind of trying to one-upmanship with everyone else around you, and I think it means hanging people out to dry. And I didn't want to do that, and it was hard. You had to really be careful not to compromise. So I think my view of them as people who, yes, they made mistakes, but they had real lives, and this was their job, and we were filming it, and that was a privilege. And of course, we want to be fair and accurate in what's going on, but just being really careful that I was honest in how I was doing it, which was a challenge in journalism. You get asked to do crazy things, news desks would call us on trips, and, you know, ask us to do things. I just thought, I'm not okay with that. So I think it was just being wary of that, and I think that was partly my Asian faith that made a real difference to that.
Mm. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I guess maybe some of us know as well, it can be hard not to necessarily do exactly what's expected in quite a lot of different work situations.
Yeah.
So that's really relatable. What would you say that you hope for the Royals?
That's a good question. I think I would say, especially for King Charles, he's in a position now of real authority and power, and I think I would want, the same for him as all the royal family and everyone really, but for him, there was this whole debate about, was he going to be the friend of the faith, the face, what was that woman mean, what did it look like? I think the thing that I really cared about was, does King Charles, does he actually know what this faith is fully? Does he fully understand the message of Christianity, who Jesus is, who Jesus claims to be? It's massive, it's huge. Has he looked into it for himself as an adult? And I wondered if most of the people involved in that whole debate, I wondered if any really had ever looked into as an adult, is this faith even worth defending? What are we talking about when we talk about faith? And what is Christianity? And I think that would be the big thing as an adult. Has he ever actually asked questions on who Jesus is, what his claims mean for his life? And I would love that for King Charles and for all of the royal family, in fact, for anyone. And I know that it's interesting with the royals, I think people have lots of different perspectives on, is Charles going to be a good king? What are Harry and Meghan like? What's William truly like? What's their marriage like? All these things, and I think lots of perspectives on them. And I think people have a similar view to, I think they think we can think of Jesus like that, have lots of opinions on who Jesus is, but actually Jesus' claims are massive. He claims to be God, he claims to be our saviour, eternal. He's either speaking the truth or he's totally crazy. It's very binary. It's either true or it's not. I think all these views and opinions, and he's a good guy, I just think it's one or the other. And I do just wonder if people, I don't know, later in life, if they've ever questioned that and looked into themselves. And I know that the Queen herself, she had a wonderful faith. In fact, she shares my faith. She would agree that the Lord Jesus is on the throne eternally. And she does a great quote about her saying she would lay her crown down at the true King's feet, Jesus' feet. And her faith was real, and there's lots of great anecdotes, things that I know from first hand, not directly from her speaking to me, but from those that work with her, about her faith. And it's really encouraging to hear that she does know the true King. And we pray that King Charles would as well.
Great. So you're talking about this faith of yours. Can you give us maybe a bit of background? How did you come to have this faith for yourself personally?
I always think I knew something of who Jesus was as a kid. I think I heard a bit. I didn't fully understand the gospel, the good news of Jesus, until I'd heard a talk as an honor sort of summer camp thing. I was right along, and I went along and had an amazing talk about who Jesus was. And I've always been someone who was inquisitive, probably why I went into journalism. I wanted to investigate, and I wanted to have answers. And straight away I was thinking, well, is the Bible true? How do we know this? Tell me more about it. What's the evidence? And actually the talk was that from John. I think you have a John. On your seat, do grab it and turn to page 60. There was a verse that really struck me, a couple of verses actually, which I'd love to share, and it got me thinking. So page 60, the very top, verse 30 of chapter 20. So very top, page 60. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And there's one other page, you turn over, page 62, final page, verse 24. This is the disciple who's bearing witness about these things and has written these things, John, and we know that his testimony is true. And I was really struck by the fact that this was an eyewitness, the gospel's an eyewitness testimony. I mean, even in our legal system now, we have a corroboration of eyewitnesses that is legal. We view it as legal. Different perspective on an event that seems legal. And I thought, wow, this is history, this is real, these events happened. And as I dug into the evidence and the history of manuscripts, I just thought, this is amazing. I looked at kind of I know people have often mentioned this before, but I know that there's so much more evidence for Jesus' life, death, and resurrection that is reliable, much more than Caesar existing, even. The dates are so much closer to his life, and we never question the existence of Stephen. But it's interesting how, as an adult, people often wouldn't think, well, I'll look into who Jesus is, because this is quite clearly strong. So I think that was something that really struck me, was history. And there was a quote from a historian who's a lecturer at Oxford who said, I'm a Christian because I'm a historian. And I thought that was amazing. And I did history at uni, and it really resonated with me. This is history we're dealing with. It's true, it happened. It's worth my time to investigate it. And so I did, and the more I read of John, I took it home that summer, and I read through John, and I could see things that Jesus was doing in John. You see, flick through, and we do take it home with you and read it if you never have. He was doing God things. These were miracles that I just could not explain away. They were God things. And I think for me, that just really struck me. I couldn't stop reading, basically. As soon as I sort of got interested, I thought, this is true, I need to keep digging into it. And then I did, and I think also as I read the Bible, I could see that it was the most true thing to my experience and to the world around me. The way it described the world I saw, it was just true. It was the pain, suffering. I could just see it. It was honest and vital. There was nothing surprising. It was surprising in some ways, but not a surprise to see it with my own eyes. I could see the reality of the world around me. I could see that things were a mess. And so this view of me wanting to kind of pull my socks up and do things that were good for God and do better and earn my way in, it just seemed to get a joke at that point. I think, well, I had that view, and I could just do things a bit better and I'd get into heaven that way. And I just realised that just wasn't going to cut it. There was a real problem. I was not perfect. I knew that full well. I think everyone deep down does know that. And there was a problem that I wasn't going to be able to fix. And so when I heard the gospel, the good news of Jesus, that he came to die for that mess that I created, my rebellion, so sin has been my rebellion against God, us in our world not wanting him to rule. I just thought, that's just amazing news. I want to hear more. This is incredible. He's paid the price that I know I deserve, and actually I can have a relationship with my creator. That was just such a new thing for me to realise. And it changed everything. I think I just realised for the first time this was eternally life-changing news. Yeah, so I think that's where it first struck me, and I kind of grew from there.
Mm. Thanks so much for sharing. Yeah, it sounds like it'll be a complete change of mindset. And you also mentioned just at the end that it's also a life change. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a bit of an insight into what kind of life changes came out of this new faith?
Mm. Yeah, I think it did change everything. I think I realised that if what Jesus was saying was true, what he claimed was true, he was our eternal ruler. It meant that actually right now, even as we're sitting through it, he is reigning eternally. He's in control of everything. And I think that just meant it changed my perspective on my whole life. It wasn't just that I was a Christian, it wasn't a Sunday thing. Actually, he was God and he was eternal and he was ruling and reigning right now. Then everything in my life, every part of my life was going to be affected by that. Everything I did, my priorities, the way I worked, I mentioned that before, I think it did affect that. I think I was very aware that if my colleagues knew I was a Christian, then the gospel was on display, and actually that matters, that how I worked, I think it influenced that. I think it also influenced my desires for people around me. I wanted people to know this thing. I wanted people to hear about Jesus. So I think it changed my priorities. Even things like career progression. I mean, I know you mentioned it can be hard. It is really hard. I just remember thinking, there are loads of times where I thought, oh, if I say no to this, there are enough people queuing up for this job. They might just get rid of me. And I was aware of that. But I also knew that actually, I knew he was king. And actually, eternally, I knew where I was going. And that mattered more. I think we all crave security, don't we? And I think in Jesus, we have security. And I was really aware of that. And that was such a joy. So yeah, it changed my priorities, my perspectives, and kind of think, you know, how I viewed the rest of my life going forward, I think.
Okay, that's great. So you say your faith did change the way you did journalism. Mm-hmm. What about now as a full-time mum?
Yeah, it's a bit of a change. Going from like the sort of lovely trips and travel to lots of nappies and lots of crying, even to the story was total chaos. So yeah, really big change in life. I know people can find that it is really hard. It's quite, I think if your work is your identity, it's tough, isn't it? And I've had friends like my dad even just retired. I think that's a big thing. And I think it did really help that transition, knowing that my value as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, is actually in the Lord, not in what I'm doing. It didn't matter if I was working in that particular role, if I'm now currently full-time mum, and I'll probably go back to changing, you know, going to work in a different whatever again. Just those changes, it doesn't matter. My values are in Jesus. And also, what I wanted, you asked what I wish for Charles or for the Royals, it's the same for moms at Schoolgate. I love some of the moms at Schoolgate who I'm chatting with to think about whether, you know, they've ever read the Bible or thought about Jesus and who he is and what he claims for them. And also my old colleagues who I still love doing and meet up with, still same desires there. So I think my priorities and my desires have not changed, even though I've had a role change in some ways, although not permanent. But yeah, I think that hasn't changed. I'm a Christian first, and my job was definitely secondary to that. I think I hope and pray that I have that same issue as I move, you know, back into the workplace. And so I think that was probably the biggest thing. I think, again, if you look down at verse, this is what I found so helpful when I was younger and still do now, page 60. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. I think that life there, that amazing eternal life that we're offered through Jesus' death, is incredible. So I know where I'm going. I know that's guaranteed. I've got no worries about that. And that just changes how I live every day now. I think you know where you're going for definite. The way you live now is totally altered by that. So no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm changing nappies, whatever, I know where I'm heading, and I know that the Lord is with me, and that I'm serving him each day. So I think that's probably the biggest help for me as a Christian, just knowing that I'm getting I've got eternal hope, and that can shape each day, regardless of what I do.
That's really inspiring. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your thoughts on that. We'll have Q&A with Emma in just a moment. It's just gone 1:30, so if you need to head back to the office, feel free to go. But before you do, can I just draw your attention to a couple of things? So inside the Gospels, I think there's a slip of paper for feedback. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this event. What was good? What could be better next time? We're also going to be running an intro session to Christianity next week, time to be confirmed, but please get in touch with us. There are a few pens on there, so please do let us know if you'd like to come to that, or to grab a coffee with either myself or Bill. That would be fab. We'd love to get to know you more. Also, the other thing inside your gospel is the flyer for next week. The three events, including next week, the Heart of the Christian Good News, is next Wednesday lunchtime, and then we have every Wednesday lunchtime talks ongoing throughout the year. So we'd love to see you again. Thank you very much for coming. That's all for now. So we'll reconvene in 1 minute or 2 minutes, maybe. Feel free to grab more food.
What kind of thing would the news desk ask you to do that would make you feel uncomfortable? Like. It seems that you had quite an informal relationship, and it was sort of like you scratch my back, you scratch yours. So, because from the outside, it looks like the newsreader was just trying to get an opportunity, whereas they're given an opportunity. So, I'm surprised that there was a conflict of interest between you and your own team trying to get more that might sabotage that relationship. So, I was wondering what was happening there.
I think it varied so much. I mean, when I was more junior, when I wasn't actually doing law, so you could get asked to do things like door knocking families that had just lost loved ones. And I mean, one of our colleagues did it and they hadn't even told yet. I mean, just crazy things go on, and you just think, not happy to do that. And I know that there are investigative journalists where that is their job, that's an entirely different role. But I think a lot of it was just slightly underhand. So we were asked to film something that was off camera, officially it was off camera, and they wanted the footage to run. The agreement was, what was hard was so often you're on the ground and they're not, and you make decisions and agreements on the ground based on what you see and what you know. And a lot of the news desk and media would be like, oh, I've just seen it on the other channels, and want this, want that. And it was just whether you were willing to push boundaries. So we didn't, we filmed something, it was agreed that it wouldn't run. There was something that, maybe really wrong, and they didn't, whatever it was. And on the whole, we ran what we filmed. We weren't kind of, we were often fair. I mean, if things were filmed and they ran. But sometimes I was asked things that were off camera, and I just mean that we were still rolling, but officially the event had ended. I just certain times was willing if I'd agree otherwise. So just things like that, or I mean, even little things like signing documents. You're often told to sign on behalf of others documents and stuff when you're abroad because you're away and you can't get someone else to do it. And I just thought that's slightly fortunate. So just there's things that often happen in all workrooms and offices. But I just knew my colleagues knew I was a Christian. I knew that they would see everything I was doing, and I didn't want it to then hinder the gospel chats I then had with them. And I was just really aware of that. There were so few Christians in our office, in fact, none in my youth room. And so I was really aware that they were watching me and how I was living. So I think that really affected me, but in different people, different ways. But they were just some of the things that we might get asked to do.
Did you ever have consequences for saying that?
No, I'm just thinking if there was ever... Yeah, so just probably just irritated people, like when I didn't sign something, which was going to be a bit of a pain, or something like that. They can always get done somehow, you know, we can send signatures now virtually, they've lost the way to do things. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure it can irritate people, but the flip side was, I think people knew I was trustworthy. So my bosses therefore knew I was actually reliable, and if I said I'd do something, I would do it, I'd get it done. So the irony was, I think it might irritate them in the meantime, the long term, actually, I think there was real respect there, and I respected those, I just think people could see that I was someone who was reliable. I wasn't going to backstab my colleagues. That happened. It's quite, I would just say, it's quite a bullish environment in the newsroom, and a lot of our management were ex-Tamil. You know, it was an intense environment. Jobs came and went very quickly. But I think if you were someone who was not going to backstab other people to get ahead, it was noticed, and it doesn't always mean that it helps you. But on the whole, I think people respect that, and I think opportunities can come from that and discussion about my faith. I found. Good question. I mean, it's really hard.
It's reassuring.
That's even more pushes than user though, because there aren't very many.
A follow-up question to that. Yeah. But how does you mentioned that just knowing that Jesus is Lord, He's sustaining us all, He is Lord.
Yeah.
That helped you get you confidence to live for Him. What kind of things would help you to see the unseen reality of Jesus being Lord?
Yeah,
that would give you that.
It's a really good question. I would have found it really hard to keep going as a Christian, I think, if I wasn't plugged in to a group of other Christians around me. So in the workplace, I was just so on my own that it was scary at times. I didn't feel the support necessarily that I'd want. So I think church planning was amazing. Things like this, there wasn't actually one of these in me. If there had been, it would have been amazing. Because you then just remember in the middle of the week, actually there are other Christians in the city doing the same things on the front line, wanting to be bold and wanting to witness to their faith and serve the Lord in their work. And that's just so encouraging. I needed that in the week just to remember, lift my eyes from kind of the busyness of work could be so intense. The news, everything's due 5 minutes ago. It's just so, the pace is so fast. I think it really helped me remember who I was working for. And in those challenges, actually, I knew the Lord was actually in charge. Okay, my boss might be irritated for 5 minutes, but actually the Lord knew. And that really helped me. So these kind of meetings, about Sundays, having good Christian mates to be helping me, that really helped me keep going.
Yeah. The way you talk about being a child made it sound like you were being diplomatic and that you actually thought he didn't have a strong faith. Now, I heard he does.
Yeah.
So, is there anything behind that?
I've got a good Christian friend that was in private secretary for a long time, and he's a great guy. And I think he would say that Charles knows that he can't question that there is a creator. He's very aware of that. And I think he longs to, I think he's hungry, maybe that's their opening it. So that he's heard the gospel a lot. There are a lot of people that have got alongside him. And someone asked me actually recently about the Queen and her faith. And there's a Bible up in Balmoral that's Queen Victoria's, and her favourite possession, she's talked about it regularly, is Queen Victoria's Bible, which has amazing notes in the margin, underlying her favourite verses. Some of it's from John and some of the epistles, really great passages. And the Queen regularly read that, and it was really dear to her. And Charles has that now. And I'm aware that, you know, that will have influenced him. I'm sure he will look at that. And it was, you know, genuinely, I think, the Queen's prized possession was that Bible, Queen Victoria's. And so I think I don't know him personally, so I can't say, but I know that there's interest there. I'm not sure whether he has really understood the relational side of who Jesus is and what he offers, but I don't know. But there are a lot of people around him who've been sharing the gospel with him and giving to Jesus, so that's amazing. You can pray on.
As you look in on the city now, as someone coming from the media, what would you say to us as we go back to our workplaces surrounded by Christians? Because I think you probably have an interesting insight on our sort of jobs coming from your sector, maybe?
Can you repeat the end question? Sorry.
Well, I'll say it all again. You've been in the media and the environment city, you've brought to see some people going back to our offices. Now, I just wondered if, as a media person, you had an insight into city world and how we should evangelise and deal with our non-Christian colleagues.
It's really tough. The environment's so tough nowadays. And I think one thing I found out for is the perspective, the media's so loud, but actually, and it does reflect the newsroom, there are just so few Christians in it. And just the environment in the newsroom is very secular. And so what we're hearing, the loud voices around us, I think be encouraged. It's a very small group of people that run the news. It's very small in media, actually, but they're so powerful. So I remember being quite encouraged when I remembered that. Their power sounds loud, it's very few people, and they're not reflecting everyone. So when you go back to your news, your offices, it can feel like that, but actually there are a lot of Christians around the city who are longing to tell you about Jesus and they're longing to be bold. And I think that encouraged me to think, actually we can be bold, because although everything's very, very loud, it's still from a very small proportion that are sort of dictating that. And I think we shouldn't be fearful of being bold in our workplaces. But it's hard going back, and I know that friends of mine are now back in the office. The change is so different, so you're not seeing your colleagues in the same way each day. Relationally, that's hard. Some working from home one day and not the next. But I don't, in terms of perspective, I think just that all workplaces are tough in whatever way, and I think it's wonderful if we can be living out our faith. Isn't it a great loss for people? We say we should just see that then in our lives, in whatever we're doing, wherever we are.
Maybe just, we might have time for one more question. But if we don't, that's also fine. Thanks everyone for coming.